The advice and opinions expressed by the host of Autism Live and her guests are meant solely as suggestion and should not be in any way construed as child-specific advice. Any choices you make in determining your child's treatment are completely at your own discretion.
Good morning and welcome to Autism Live in April. It's the A's month. April is autism, awareness, acceptance, appreciation, action. We're adding words every day. So thrilled to be here with you. I'm Shannon Penrod. I identify as a proud pony. I'm a parent of a neurodiverse individual. And I'm just like a lot of people in this world trying to sit in the front row and learn how I can be the best possible ally to individuals who are on the autism spectrum, regardless of which words they use to describe themselves. So thrilled to be here on this wonderful day. We got a great guest who's going to be joining us. Tom Myland is here with us. He's going to be talking about his new book, which you're going to love because it's about mental health. Mental health for all of us. And I love that one of the things that Tom says about his book is that it's not just for young men on the autism spectrum, although it's fabulous for them, but it's a book for all of us about self-help, mental health, self-care, things that we can do to be taking care of ourselves. And, you know, part of that is lessons that he learned during the pandemic. So we can't wait to bring Tom back in to talk with us. And we've got jargon to do. You can see it's already up on the wall. But, you know, sometimes I like to take just a minute and do a kudo and throw out a beautiful hug when something makes sense. So I'm going to do that right after I tell you guys that we're live right now. Today is Wednesday. What's the date today? It is the 3rd. I get so confused. Good morning, Rodney. So thrilled to see you. You're always like the first one in here. That's always a thrill for me to see that you're there. So we're live right now, and we appreciate comments and questions and sharing and liking. And I get a particularly wonderful happy when people review on any of the things that we're on. As I was saying, we're live right now on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. You can be writing in right now, as Rodney did, and tell us where you are. Like, what neck of the woods are you in? You don't have to tell me your address. Just tell me what city you're close to, the closest major city that you are near, because I'm geographically challenged, as you will learn if you watch the show much. Anyway, the show will be live today, and then you'll be able to watch it. You can watch it on Facebook and YouTube and Twitter. But later on, you can watch it on YouTube. It just becomes part of our library on YouTube. You can go to Autism Live. So it's youtube.com/autismlive. We've been doing this show, we're in our 14th year, so there are some shows, you know what I'm saying? And you can search them by topics. Very exciting. Also, in addition to Autism Live, you'll see that there are other shows that are there on our library as well. Although now, Ask Dr. Doreen is its own podcast, and it has its own YouTube channel. So you can go there and search things there. We are starting to move more of her shows over from our platform. But we hope that you'll do that. And, of course, most of you, the lion's share of you, listen to us in podcasts. I just love that. I'm getting more and more into listening during the commute. To podcasts. It's really fun. I'm really listening to the Long Island Psychic, can I tell you? We can talk about that another time. That's a whole other thing. But really into listening. I'm waiting for a message from my mother. So there we go. Hey, I didn't know that you were near Kansas City, Rodney. Love that. So thrilled to know that. That makes me very happy. We love Kansas City for a lot of different reasons, but it was birthplace for Ed Asner. So we particularly love it for that. And that was where Ed asked to be, I don't know whether he was cremated or just buried, but that's his final resting place. That's how we say that. In any case, see how I get sidetracked? But it's the enthusiasm. I wanted to make sure that we shout out to Kansas City and to Rodney. But you can be listening to our podcast wherever you download podcasts. It's a free download. Please check it out. Our fabulous Chris Desmond, look, he's so on it, showing you all the different places that you can be watching and listening. And do keep in mind that it is a free download for you when you get our podcast, but you will hear advertisers on the podcast. And when you do, I hope that you embrace that. When I hear that on the Hey Spirit, I'm like, good for us. I didn't have to pay for this podcast because that sponsor did. Now, if you really want to listen to the show and you're like, I'm in a hurry, Shannon, I want the information, and I'm willing to pay a little bit, a small fee for it, just know that you can go to glow.fm/autismlive. You can subscribe. It's slash Autism Live, but it's really you subscribing to all of the feeds from Autism Network. So you will get not only Autism Live, but Ask Dr. Doreen for one low price. It's $5 a month, even less if you pay for it for a full year. And you get everything we do, which is really, really remarkable. Don't forget to like, share, review, all of those things. Okay, so I said I had a shout out. I have a big shout out today. Who doesn't love Lego? And let me just say, I am, like all of you, I'm a huge fan of Lego. I am a huge fan of just the play and the fun and all the diversity of play that they bring. But I'm also a fan of what it does for our individuals who are on the autism spectrum, that there is something about the motor planning and the way the bricks go together and again, the diversity of play, the things that you can build with it that ignites the hearts and minds of all individuals, but I think in particular our kiddos on the spectrum. I think there is a special synergy with the Lego toys that they really love. I don't think I've met a kiddo on the spectrum who just didn't love Legos. I'm trying to think if there's anybody who's just like, nah, that's not my cup of tea. I can't think of anybody. I'm sure that there's one, because everybody has their own thing, right? But I'm saying the vast majority of our kiddos really love Legos, and because there's so many different ways you can play with it. You can be so individual with it. So, diversity of play, I'm just going to say it again. And I also loved Legos because they have transition points where there are different levels of Legos, right? That you do Duplos when your kids are really little, and then you get into Legos and you get into the bigger kits and things like that. But then when the kids get older, there is a whole robotics program that my son flourished in. It was a gateway for him to be able to discover himself, make friends, learn more, learn about computers. Just amazing. Lego Mindstorm. So, and Lego Robotics. I love Legos. But Legos have just leveled it up. Did you just hear them go boop, 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 boop? They leveled up. Because what they have done is that they have gone through the process. And now, let me read this so I get it specifically right. All Lego stores across the U.S. and Canada, all of them, are being Culture City Sensory Inclusive certified throughout the month of April this year. This is a process that they're going through so that everybody can be trained and understand neurodiversity, neurodivergence, and can be better equipped to be able to meet individuals who come into the store and their sensory needs. How amazing is that? They're taking the time to make sure that everyone is being trained, but that's not the only thing that they're doing. They have several global initiatives that are absolutely mind-blowing. They're proudly supporting World Autism Awareness Month with concrete long-term commitments aimed at embracing neurodiversity and fostering inclusive experience for all fans, but especially children. So let's talk about some of the different things that they're doing. They're doing that sensory inclusive training through Culture City. If you want to look this up, it's Culture with a K. And they will have that done by the end of 2024. There is an asterisk. One of their centers is already certified through another organization, so we love that. But they will all be certified by the end of 2024, and many of them by the end of April 2024. The March 2024 edition of Lego Life magazine will introduce enhanced accessibility features, including redesigned layouts, and language adjustments developed in collaboration with neurodiversity experts from special networks to ensure a clearer and more inclusive reading experience for children. How amazing is that? The LEGO Foundation's Play for All Accelerator Program dispersed, are you ready for this? Hold on to your seats, $11.23 million in grants to five organizations developing innovative products and services to meet the needs of neurodivergent children, ensuring that play remains inclusive and beneficial for all. I know, it's heady stuff here. And throughout April, the LEGO Group's social channels will feature new video series called Love the Way You Think, where LEGO Group amplifies the voices and talents of autistic creators, showcasing diverse forms of creativity. First to be featured is Allison Gale, a LEGO creator in the U.S., followed by Casey Remrov-Vormer, a pencil artist in Canada, and Gaku, an artist and painter in Japan. Love this. So you guys are going to want to check that out on their social media challenges. I watched one of them this morning. It was just so wonderful. Love the Way You Think. I love that they're titling that. I keep evoking Joanne Laura throughout this week. I'm sure I'm just missing her, but it's April and it's a month where she would be very loudly speaking. She was the founder of Autism Works Now, also autism movement therapy, and she was a dancer, and you would go to her studio and watch her work with kiddos on the spectrum, and she was a big fan of having kids cross the midline. I don't know if you guys know this, but doing activities that cross the midline are very good for your brain. And she was amazing when she worked with kiddos because she would have them moving across the floor and doing dance moves, but then they would stop and they would do a little improv where they would be encouraged to vocalize and sometimes speak. But her favorite phrase, whenever she would give them something that maybe they had to problem solve with their body, whenever they were doing something, the praise that she would give was she would say, I love the way you're thinking. I love the way you're thinking. So I love that that is the phrase that LEGO is using for these, because when we embrace the way people think, boy, sky's the limit. So love LEGO. Thank you so much, LEGO, for all that you do. We are big fans here at Autism Live and at Autism Network. Thank you for leveling up. Thank you for including our kids and for seeing the value in the way they think. Love it. Seven gold stars. Hey, Joannie. So glad that you're joining us from the Philly suburbs. So thrilled that you're here. Okay. I need to get to Jargon of the Day because then we got to get Tom in here, and he is amazing, and you're going to love his new book. So at this point in the show, we always take on one word, one phrase, one acronym. We try to figure out what in the hey, nani, nani are we talking about? What do these experts mean? I give you an actual definition, and often I make fun of the extra jargon in that actual definition, and then I will give you another definition sometimes, but we try to give you an example so that you can begin to understand why would this be important to me today. So let's take a look. Our term today is chaining. Doesn't it sound like we're going to make paper chains? Kind of, but with behavior. So let's take a look at our actual definition. Okay, here we go. It's a long one. Chaining is an instructional strategy grounded in applied behavior analysis, ABA theory. Chaining is based on task analysis. Oh, if you don't know what that is, now you've got a dictionary coming out. In which individual steps are recognized as requirements for task mastery. Chaining breaks a task down into small steps and then teaches each step within the sequence by itself. I really like that last sentence. Chaining breaks a task down into small steps and then teaches each step within the sequence by itself. This came to us from the Nebraska Autism Spectrum Disorders Network. Thank you for that. Not horrible definition, but it's a little, jargon intensive, because if you don't know what a task analysis is, you might go, I'm not quite getting it. So let's move on to our working definition. And, it's long again. So chaining, and this came to us from Behavior Analysis Programs Guide. This is a method that therapists use to help children gain proficiency in complex multi-step directions. All right, that's easy to understand. Chaining is closely related to task analysis. There it is again. Once a task analysis is developed, chaining is used to teach each step. The method breaks down the task analysis into specific instructions that link together. These steps enable kids to complete the entire task. All right, you might still be going, I don't know what the task analysis is. So, a task analysis is when you take any big behavior that you want to do. So, the example, and the thing that's fun about this is when I first moved to California, one of my first roommates, there were three young women, we were in this apartment, and one of them was studying to be an OT. I did not know that the world was preparing me for all the things that I needed to have. So she was studying to be an occupational therapist. And her big thing, the one semester she was doing was all about task analysis. So she would have one of us take something that we needed to do. There were two examples that I got stuck with. One was brushing my teeth, that I needed to brush my teeth in front of her like 500 times. Because she had to make a list of all of the things that I had to do to be able to brush my teeth. And she would take it into the teacher, and the teacher would be like, oh, the toothbrush just appeared in her hand. So I would have to do it in slow motion. And we'd be talking about it. I was like, okay, I'm reaching for my toothbrush. I'm having to grasp the toothbrush, and now I have to pull it up out of the holder. But now I have to set it down because I have to take the cap off of the toothpaste, and I have to set that cap down. And now I need to pick up the toothbrush, and I have to squeeze the toothpaste, and I have to move it, right? It gets that granular. What exactly? But that's just getting the toothpaste onto the toothbrush, right? And then I have to put the toothpaste down. And do I put the toothbrush down too? No, I don't do that. But some people might do that and put the cap back on. Or a lot of people, like me, do that last, right? Or some people don't do it at all. That gets messy. But the task analysis looks at every little behavior that you have to do enable you to complete the whole big task, which is brushing teeth. The other one that I had to do was open the refrigerator door. Oh, my gosh. This was like 4 days of my life that we had to analyze what was I doing, because we do these things sometimes and we don't think about them, right? But a lot of times she was working with people that had head trauma or something, and they were having to reteach all the steps, and they needed to know all the steps. So it was a whole thing about you go and you stand in front of the refrigerator and you put your hand on the handle and you open, but you are in the way of the refrigerator. So you have to pivot. Never noticed that I was doing that before. You have to pivot and get out of the way of the door in order to open it. Okay. So she would make a task analysis of all the different steps. You can do this too with any behavior that your child does, or you can look it up online. Lots of people have done it for you. If you say, okay, well, I'd really like for my child to, let's say, get in the car and have all of their stuff in order to be able to go to school in the morning, right? There's a lot of steps that it takes to get in the car. You can do task analysis on getting your stuff into the car to go to school. You probably can Google and say age 5, right? And they will give you a task analysis, and you can make it specific to your child. Excuse me. Like, for instance, maybe you have stairs to go up and down, that you would add that. So that's what the task analysis, it lists every single step that it takes to be able to complete this entire behavior chain successfully. And all kinds of things in our life require all these steps. Now here's the interesting part for me as an ex-teacher and a parent, is that let's say that there's 22 steps to how you need to be able to complete this thing. And you might be able to do 10 of them. But if you can only do 10 of the 22 steps, you might regularly fail at completing the step and getting whatever the reward for it was. Let's just say, the task is to fry an egg. And maybe you are fabulous at flipping the egg, which is a very hard skill, right? But it's the breaking the egg that you're having a hard time with. It smushes and now you have eggshells in your egg. So making an egg is not a fun thing for you because you don't want to eat eggshells, right? Or if it's brushing teeth and you're not, you know, you can do the whole toothpaste and everything, but the actual brushing is not so good. So you end up having cavities and the dentist is saying to you, you need to brush your teeth more. And you're like, it doesn't really work. You're not getting the reward for it. So we tend to want to do it less because if something isn't rewarding to us personally, then it's of less interest to all of us, not just individuals on the spectrum, but to all of us. So what chaining does is say, let's make sure that the person can be successful, that they can do all different steps of it. But usually with chaining, what we say in the beginning when you're teaching a skill is, let's not take it all on at one time, all at once and overwhelm the person. Let's either do forward chaining or backward chaining. So forward chaining would be you have the task analysis and that you say, okay, I'm just going to teach the first thing on the step. So let's go back to the toothbrush, right? And the first step was to reach for the toothbrush, not even to grab the toothbrush, but to reach for the toothbrush. And so we're going to ask the child to reach for the toothbrush. They might already be able to reach it and grab it and pull it towards them, but we're going to reward that. We're going to give big rewards and say, great job, praise. We might even give a sticker for something that we're going to have afterwards, a toy or a treat or something. You did a good job. We're acknowledging that that was good work. And then we're going to do the rest of it for them so that they're like, hey, this wasn't horrible and it was pleasant and I got rewarded for doing the thing. And forward chaining would be that as soon as they have that and we know they have that, then we go to the next step. That the next step would maybe be putting the toothbrush down, or the kiddo might be moving fast enough now that they already have that. And so we start with the toothpaste and taking off the cap. I will tell you that sometimes we move too fast. We forget that it could be very reinforcing to just be, you know, told good job for putting the toothbrush down. If you find that it's not working, go back and see which one of the little steps did you leave out. But that's forward chaining. You start from the first and you have them do one thing, you do the rest. Then they do two things. It is like the paper chain. And then you do the rest. But don't forget to reward until they're able to do the whole thing by themselves. Now, backward chaining is the exact opposite. You do everything, and then you just have them do the last step. So, you know, you do everything, and then you say, okay, now we put the cap back on the toothpaste. Yay, you brushed your teeth. You did a good job. And that is the way we do backward chaining. I remember when this was being explained to me, it was years after we had been doing ABA therapy, and I watched them do this, but I didn't know this is what it was called, and I didn't know what it was. And I was explaining this to a member of my family with an example of getting dressed because I'd never seen the task analysis for putting a shirt on before. And the task analysis said to lay the shirt out on the bed, which I don't do that when I put on a shirt. And then the task analysis said to take your hands, your thumbs, and put them in the shirt and then scrunch all the way up to the neck. I don't do that when I put on a shirt. And then from there, you grabbed a hold of it and you pulled it over your neck. This is a shirt without buttons, like a turtleneck. And I was saying to my niece, that's not how I put on a shirt. Is that how you put on a shirt? And she was like, oh my gosh. I was trying to teach this to somebody in our family and I left out the scrunch part. And they went back and taught it to them and then they could put their shirt on. It's the little steps sometimes that make the difference in the teaching. And again, it's not the same for everybody, but you can, they have them all over the internet now, task analysis, and you can customize them. I'm saying hello to Helen. And Joannie says, that's funny, Shannon. That is how we do training longs. We have to walk to the bathroom, open the door, walk in, walk to the sink. Yeah, exactly, because that is how to teach a big skill. That's chaining. But I will say this, that once somebody is getting it, right, we will start to fade the prompting. So in the beginning, it might be that you're prompting, but then we fade to a thing on the wall that's pictures saying step one, step two, step three. And we might be saying to them, okay, make sure you do step one, right? But eventually we would just point to them and then we would stop pointing and see that they do it completely on their own. And then I've seen people get so clever with the fading thing where they literally will print out 10 of these, but they will print them out so that they get less and less intense and more blurry. It's like it's fading over time, but in a quicker time. And then the fade thing goes away so that there's nothing there anymore. And the person is just brushing their teeth on their own. It feels excruciatingly slow, you guys, but the truth of the matter is it's really fast. I remember there were things that I was like, oh my gosh, are we ever going to get to the point where this just happens on its own? And it did, and it has, and it gets really good, you guys. So I encourage you, and she says military training, that this is what they do in the military. The task analysis, they're doing that in the military? That's amazing. Well, it's specific, right? Going back to Legos, if you think about with Legos, that they show when you have a big kit for Legos, and they show you, okay, step one. And now some people are going to do it exactly the way they show it. And I love watching how people use directions for Legos, because some people, there's a little thing in the corner. This is where they're so diverse, Lego. There's a little thing in the corner that says, here are the pieces that you need. And this is how many of them you need in order to do this step. And I know some people like to get those pieces and line them up first and go, okay, that's what I'm doing. Other people like to follow the picture and look one at a time and grab those pieces. It's all individual. But it's step by step by step by step. And the more you do Legos, of course, our kiddos get to the point where they barely look at the manual, some of them, not naming names. Anyway. Chaining, it's a very powerful teaching tool because it helps us to not be overwhelmed with this huge task that we are somehow not getting yet, right? And it makes it possible for us to access it a bite at a time and stick these behaviors together to create a behavior chain. That's why they call it chaining. Okay, our guest today is Thomas Island, and of course, he has been with us many times. He's one of our favorite guests. Things you need to know about Thomas. He was diagnosed with autism at the age of 13. Since accepting his diagnosis, and hear that language, he has been recognized as an award-winning author and thought leader, and that is so true. He was a certified public accountant, and he had an entire career in that, but he left that career in 2015 to become a keynote speaker, a certified human potential coach, and diversity, equity, and inclusion consultant. So those of you with companies who are looking to beef up your DEI, there you go. He is the owner of Come to Life Coaching, which is based on the title of his best-selling book, Come to Life, Your Guide to Self-Discovery. We've talked about this book before on the show. If you've got teens, it is a great book. You know, we're coming up on summer, and it's one of my top picks. If you're looking for things to do with your teens over the summer, oh my goodness. There are all these activities that you can do with, but sometimes separately from your child, where you will get to know each other better. I remember doing this with Jem, and it helped him to know me and me to know him. So fabulous. The mission of that book is to empower individuals on and off the spectrum to live the life of their choice. I really feel like it was very beneficial to us. Also, Thomas has spoken at the United Nations. He's given a TEDx talk titled How to Come to Life, and is one of only 93 Toastmasters International accredited speakers in the world. He is the only person on the autism spectrum to achieve this designation. He currently resides in Santa Clarita, California, with his fiance, Rosetta, who's also been on the show. And I believe it's Rosetta who recently received the Junior Chamber International's prestigious 10 Outstanding Young Americans. But you're going to have to clarify that for me, Tom, because I don't know if that's you or Rosetta. Oh, no, that's you. That's got, because it says, and has finished 6 marathons, 2 half marathon triathlons, 2 full Ironman triathlons, and recently broke his own Guinness Book of World Records as the world's oldest person with autism to finish a full Ironman triathlon. It makes you sound like you're old, Tom, but you're still young. We're welcoming Tom to talk about his new book, which I'm so excited for us all to hear more about. The title of it is My Glass is Full. And then there is a subtitle for it as well. But for some reason, I don't think I have that on the paper. Anyway, let's welcome Tom Eiland. He can tell us all about it. So, Tom, it's you who got the Toya Award.
Yes, I got the 10 Outstanding Young Americans Award from Junior Chamber International in 2020.
But we have to say, it's amazing. But we have to say, your fiance is also, she is a mover and shaker and thought leader, too. So it wouldn't have surprised me if she was also. But you got this new book out. Can you hold it up for us and tell us what the subtitle is? Because I don't have that.
It's My Glass is Full, Stories of Putting Mental Health First.
Yeah.
My Glass is Full, Stories of Putting Mental Health First. And I got a lot of ideas from this book being in and being past the pandemic, because I really took some time to look at where I was in life and also where my peers were in their lives, given the isolation and the rejection they'd had up to that point and what was on the horizon for them. And I think this was also a time, looking beyond the autism community a bit, to evaluate our relationships, our well-being, our futures, and what we have and maybe should not be tolerating as we move forward. So I wrote this book, My Glass is Full, Stories of Putting Mental Health First, to have us check ourselves every now and then, make sure we're putting our oxygen mask on first before we assist others, so that way we are making sure we live a happy and fulfilling life.
I have so many questions, because I'm going to admit this is not something I'm good at. And I know I'm not alone in this. I feel so strongly about how important this is for all of us. And I think it's very important that we teach this to individuals on the spectrum, but I'm going to call myself out, and any other moms who are watching who want to call themselves out, I can only speak for myself. It's very hard for me to do this, Tom, because I think that there is something, I don't know whether it was in the training that we did or it's in the Pitocin before we give birth or whatever, but this little life comes out and you look them in the eye and you go, I have to take care of this life or else this life is going to cease to be, right? And it's a pivotal moment in a mom's life when that realization comes. And I, like a lot of people, don't know how to switch that off. I actually think, because when we're pregnant, I don't know if people know this, but I was told this, that when you eat when you're pregnant, the first food goes to the baby. That the baby takes the food first and takes the nourishment, and you have to make sure that you're eating enough to feed the baby and feed yourself. And some women have a hard time with that. I did not have a hard time with that. Eating more was not my problem. But I think maybe that's what sets us up to this thing of I associate that being a good mom is that I put his needs first, and even though he's about to be 21, I don't know how to switch that off. And it moves to other places. Like, I don't know how to say no. I'm learning how to say no, because I could work 90 hours a week and never get as much done as I want to get done or that I'd like to see get done. What do you have for us in your book? How do we get it in our bodies so that we will put that oxygen? You can explain it to me that if I'm not here, then if I cease to be, then I'm not here helping my son. But somehow I just can't manage it, Tom. I just can't. Help me.
Right. And it's no easy task. And I will commend you for being a parent and raising your son the way you have. I personally am not a parent. I personally prefer dogs as kids more so than humans. But that's me.
Yeah.
And I think, particularly in the autism community, a lot of parents constantly dwell on what life will be like after they die and their children are left behind to have their own future. Or some parents are even thinking, my child will not have a future if I am no longer alive. And I want to encourage families to see that it is possible for someone on the autism spectrum to have a life after their parents are gone. And we need to start preparing for that now. You could wait, but I highly recommend now, because the more prepared we are, the more we empower our young ones, as you like to call them, or our children.
Yes.
The more they can see that they have that power and they can become something in this life instead of leaving it to chance or putting their happiness or their future in another person's hands. This is the time for us to really take charge and move forward with what we want for our kiddos and help our kiddos see that they can do it.
I think that's a very powerful statement that you've made, because I do think that sometimes there are things I would never do for myself, but if you tell me, oh, you have to do it for yourself to teach your child, then I will do it, right? And so if I can just get it in my mind, and maybe all of us that are parents get it in our minds, that if we don't model self-care, then we are not teaching it to our children, whether they are, you know, because I want another word for children that aren't young, like our, for our children who are teens or adults. We need to be teaching this important skill to them, because if we didn't model it, how are we expecting them to be able to know how to do it?
And similarly, our children become adults.
Yes.
It's part of human nature, the stages of growth, whatever you want to call it. And at this point in time, particularly when somebody is at the age of making their own decisions, and more importantly, owning those decisions, are they being given that power? Are they being allowed to do stuff that might scare the family, might result in failure, but is in a way very much necessary to see for that person themselves that they can do things, that they are capable of more than they think, and in many cases than what their family thinks they're capable of.
Yeah.
So that way they can really go far in life and really be the people they want to be.
Yeah, I do think, Tom, not to turn this into my therapy session, but I do think, I think that my son is capable of doing all kinds of things. I don't think it's about that. I think it's about the fact that I don't know how to be in his life if I'm not doing those things. And that's my problem, not his, that I need to go solve in my own corner and go back to taking care of myself. And now I am turning it into my therapy session, but I don't know if there's other parents who can relate to this, because it all comes back to the mental health and the self-care. Mm-hmm. And that we need to put the oxygen mask on ourselves. So in this book, I noticed one of the things that you said, things that we are tolerating, Tom. What did you mean by that? What are we tolerating that we shouldn't be tolerating?
And first, let me commend you for acknowledging when it might be time for you to take a step back and let Jem be Jem, see where his life leads him for himself, by himself. I talk about tolerating in the respect of people on the autism spectrum in particular like to be or tend to be people pleasers. Like, they want to please other people, have people like them, do what others want to do, versus saying, no, thank you, or I can't help you there. Let me give you the number of someone who can. And so they go into a downward spiral, attempting to please others instead of establishing and enforcing boundaries when they might be on the verge or in the process of being used or even abused. And they may not be putting a stop to it. They're going along with it. And that takes a major toll on their mental health. And in my book, I describe how toxic people, and if you've ever heard the term energy vampires, might appear in your life. They've appeared in my life, and I describe that in the book. But think about how toxic people or energy vampires may appear in your life. Who's not supporting you when you would think or hope or expect they would? Or what kind of relationships make you feel, pardon my French, like crap at the end of the day? Who are the people that make you just feel like, I don't want to be with this person, but I don't know how to say, I don't want to hang out with you anymore? Those are the difficult but necessary conversations to be had.
Well, again, you're making me wonder if part of the reason why, if it's not that, because it's not a part of the diagnosis, right? But I'm wondering if part of it is, if you ask any group of autism parents, whether it's the moms or the dads, I don't think that we're particularly good at the boundary thing either. So then we're not teaching it. So how do you teach it? Let's start there, and we can learn for ourselves, and for the people that are watching that identify as being on the spectrum can learn from it as well. But I think also the parents need to learn and model this. Teach me, because boundaries is the thing that I don't get. It's very hard for me, Tom. Be my guru.
All right. And I understand a lot of parents out there are like the mama bears and the papa bears. They want to be so protective of their little cubs. But then when those cubs grow up and they have to learn how to fight, hunt, or figuratively speaking, go out into the real world. Yeah. Have we as family members, parents, taught them what they need to know to be safe, survive, thrive in the real world? Probably not.
I think we teach them how to be afraid. We teach them how to be afraid, Tom. But that's not good. I think we teach them how to be afraid, but that's not what we wanted to do.
Yes, and there is, granted, there is a saying, courage isn't the absence of fear. It's about acknowledging the fear and moving forward with it anyway. So I think we've kind of scared our children into submission, confinement, and learned helplessness.
Yeah. Okay, so how do we teach boundaries to anyone? How do you teach boundaries to anyone?
Okay. And part of what I talk about in my first book, Come to Life, is knowing yourself, loving yourself, and being yourself. Mm-hmm. That's a mantra that I live by. Know yourself, love yourself, be yourself. If you come across something that gives you a bit of an ill feeling, or that gut instinct tells you something is not right about this, or it, granted, there's a certain level of discomfort that might be good, like getting out of your comfort zone, that's vital for growth.
Okay.
But if you find yourself in a position where you are really hurting, like you don't like the person you're becoming, or something is just terribly wrong physically, mentally, or emotionally about a situation, that is where you have to put up the white flag, figuratively speaking, or in my case, say, the glass is full.
Yeah.
Stop. I can't take anymore. I'm out.
And how does that work for you, Tom? Do you find that people, because it's a change, right? I'm assuming that there was a period of time in which you realized I have to be better about boundaries. Am I correct?
Yeah, particularly during the pandemic, as I really took some time to take a step back, figuratively speaking, reevaluate where I was on a personal and professional level so that I could emerge a better man and a better professional from this pandemic. So I really took the pandemic, the times we were isolated, stuck at home, to really see where I was at and make the changes that were necessary. And I felt, in a way, I'd prepared my entire life for the pandemic, knowing what it's like to be isolated, make my own phone at home. So I took what I had, my experiences, and built upon that. And then people are starting to ask me, how did you do it, Tom? Can you coach my son? He's having a hard time. So we started having Zoom meetings. I've been trained as a human potential coach on Zoom, so I was familiar with the Zoom format and environment, and built a business for myself from that continues to this day. And I show my clients that they have a voice.
Yeah.
They have the power.
Yeah.
Are you using that voice and that power to create the life that you want for yourself? If the answer is yes, more power to you, keep on going. If the answer is no, we need to look at what you're yielding to that you maybe shouldn't, or what are you, getting back to that word, tolerating, that you probably should not be.
Well, and I really have to say, Tom, that I saw a shift in you. And I thought it was great. And I, you know, always think that you're great. But I also saw that you were just different in terms of you. I think you were clearer about what you were doing and what you needed. And I want to say this, that it has been very, in the autism community, I hear a lot from my friends that are adults on the spectrum about the fact that they get asked to do things a lot and there's no mention of pay. You know, and that there was a little bit of a movement before COVID, but I saw clearly that, and not just you, but a lot of people got a lot clearer about their worth during the pandemic. And I certainly saw that in you. And I want you to know, I so respect that. I so respect that. But I'm wondering if that made it hard, because people get used to these energy vampires that we're going to talk about again in a second. Sometimes people get used to taking advantage of people. And when you say, no, I'm going to have a boundary here, even when you say it super nicely and say, my boundary here is if you want my time, you're going to have to compensate me for my time. And sometimes the energy vampires turn into drama queens when that happened and go, what are you doing? Did you find that people had reactions to your setting boundaries?
I have. Some for the better, some for the not so better. And as an entrepreneur, I am the kind of person, I am willing to like have a 30-minute consultation with somebody. At that point, if you want me to come in again afterwards or help you some more, I would require some money. Why? Because my time is worth something, and there's only so much of it I can give to you for no pay than where I'm going to be requiring money. I've got bills to pay. I've got obligations to meet.
And it's a business.
I don't think that is a
not a charity.
Too much to ask. And I had to be the one to say, I can only volunteer so much time. At this point, it's like either get in or get out, please.
And when you are definitive like that, though, and people have that reaction, are you just, because you're Tom Island, and I'm sort of picturing you kind of going, well, that's them having their reaction. Or do you have a counter reaction to that? Do you find that it's easy for you to say, nope, that's the boundary, and if you don't like it, you're entitled to your feelings?
Another thing I've really noticed over the years, and particularly as I was writing this book, is everyone's going through a struggle of some kind.
That's true.
And everyone has a difficult time during those struggles, or they may fall, they may mess up, they may say something they shouldn't. And I'm reminding myself that it's their struggle to have. It's not my problem. And a book I read a while back, The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz, number two was don't take anything personal.
Love
because I think this happens a lot in the autism community too. Like we start to burden ourselves with other people's problems, and that is a heavy weight on us. But when we can let go of that, like that's on them to figure out. It's not my job to have that struggle and that person fix that. That's their job. I need to move forward and worry about myself so I can help other people once I've taken care of myself first.
That's amazing. Boy, I needed to hear that today. So let's go back, though, to the – you talk about identifying toxic people and energy vampires. What's the difference between somebody toxic, though, and the person that you just described who's having their own experience, or could they be the same?
And they do have similarities, but there are some differences as well. An example of a toxic person I mentioned earlier – where you're done talking or meeting with that person and you feel like crap, like you don't think you're a better person after associating with that particular person, almost like being like Superman around kryptonite. His powers, his sense of strength, or even his health and well-being starts to go out the window. And have you ever been in a room and you just feel like, well, I'm feeling physically sick. This doesn't feel too good.
Yeah.
That toxic environment or that toxic person having an impact on you.
Yeah.
That's something for you to acknowledge and deal with accordingly. When it comes to energy vampires, these are people that might have that toxic element to them. And it's more of an ongoing basis. Like, for example, there was a young man, and I talk about it in the book, a young man with autism who wanted my help. And I gave him some free sessions, some free guidance, even met with him for lunch a few times. But after a while, he started becoming more and more self-absorbed and self-entitled, like the world owed him something because he had a diagnosis, or I had to give him stuff because of blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And that made me feel like I wasn't being valued, and I was being figuratively sucked dry, energy vampire sucking the blood from you, sucked dry emotionally, mentally, even financially. I paid for quite a few lunches and had some coaching sessions with him I could have gotten money for, but I didn't.
Right.
So the energy vampires will figuratively suck the life out of you unless you say no more, find ways to stop associating with them, or less if possible.
Amazing. Was it hard for you to say to this person, I'm not going to continue to have lunches with you?
A little bit, because I know he had a difficult upbringing and may continue to struggle to this day. I no longer speak to him, but I also understand it's his journey.
Yes.
He needs to find his own way. I think I've played my part in his journey. I wish him nothing but the best. May he do well and be well where he is.
You're so centered, Tom. I want to be you when I grow up. Now, I want to talk specifically about this book and its message and what you are doing with this book for Toastmasters International World Championship of Public Speaking. How are these things tied together?
All right. So this book I'm using as the basis for a speech that I'm looking to have me go to the World Championship of Public Speaking. Toastmasters International has this contest every August at its international convention. And it starts at your basic club and works all the way up to this convention. So I have about 7 speeches I have to give to become the world champion. I'm currently coming up on number 3. The title of the speech is The Glass is Full. And I explain the story of how I ultimately came up with the title for this book and how it has evolved over time. So the story goes, when I first moved to California with my family, I was about 10 years old. And I would drink water a lot because of the heat. I couldn't stand the heat in California at first. Well, I have a glass in my hand here, and here's a pitcher of water in my other hand. One day, I was pouring myself a glass of water. I was so exhausted, I didn't stop pouring the water, and the water spilled all over the kitchen counter. My family saw this, and we decided at that moment, whenever I felt stressed, overloaded, or had enough, I would say out loud, the glass is full. And I continue to use that term with my family to this day as I go about situations where I might be stressed, overloaded, or have had enough. But there's another element that I introduce in this speech that I didn't really introduce in the book, but I'll visually do it here. Our young people, their glass gets full sometimes pretty quickly. Whether or not we are acknowledging and addressing that is another story. Are we stopping when our kids say stop? Are we letting them take a drink? We need to let them ingest and digest the information and sensations that are before them before we pour some more. So I'm going to take a drink, a full drink of this water here. I was pretty thirsty right then, so I drank the whole thing. So now I'm ready to take on more information. The glass is empty, figuratively speaking.
Yeah.
But as I grow up, my glass evolves, gets bigger. I can hold a little bit more. But that water, the information and sensations keeps on coming, pours in, makes some messes, but I'm more mindful of where my limits are and that I have to drink before I move on. So this glass represents my 20s. It's a medium-sized glass compared to the smaller one. By the time I get to my 30s, the glass is even bigger. I have another thing that overwhelms me a little bit in addition to information. Relationships with women, like information and complex emotions, they fill my glass sometimes to the brink. And I describe in my speech how I had a breakup with a woman with autism because I kept quiet. I thought keeping the peace would allow the relationship to stay afloat, but that wasn't helping anyone. It particularly was not helping me. So I had to speak up when I wasn't happy. And that's the big lesson I learned from that relationship. I'm now in my 40s, and I have here in my hand a wine glass. Mm. Now, I did not become an alcoholic, but this glass represents what I believe to be my relationship with my fiance, Rosetta. Because she is the stem of this glass, supporting me through my struggles. And we take on that water, the information, the complex emotions. And sometimes when we think we have it all figured out, even more starts to come and fill up the glass. But we are understanding of each other's limits and when they're about to be exceeded, and we can safely say the glass is full before the overflow takes place. So I encourage everyone out there, we live in a world of never-ending information and sensations. It may be harmful to us if left unchecked. We need to start asking ourselves the important questions. What does my glass look like? What am I filling it with? Who's supporting me? When is enough enough? Will I say the glass is full before the overflow? Mm-hmm. And if your glass does or must overflow, may it be with happiness, prosperity, love, peace, and health. That's my message that I'm conveying in my soon-to-be pre-world champion of public speaking speech.
Tom, I got chills. It's a beautiful, beautiful message. And I love that, you know, because I thought that the title of the book was about the old saying of, you know, do you see the glass as half full or half empty? And you were saying, I see it as full. And I thought it was about optimism. But I love, because we've been, it's an intense week here. It's an intense month here. We have a lot on our plate right now. And I love the idea of thinking of it as the glass is full. Because when the glass is full, that's abundance. It doesn't have to be overflowing, and we don't have to take on more. You've helped me today, Tom. This is amazing. And I hope
happy
that you...
to hear that.
What's
and
that?
I want to encourage family members to have a code word or phrase like the glass is full to say, okay, we need to take a break. We need to stop. Yep. We need to let them digest that information instead of keeping pouring it down their throats when can't breathe or drink.
Yes. But I think we need to learn these things for ourselves first so that we can model it and then know how to effectively do it with our kids. I think it starts with us. So the book is amazing, and you are amazing, and I can't wait to hear. You have to keep us posted on this competition because I got a good feeling about this, Tom. But the book is available at all the major booksellers. You guys can get it on Amazon today. You can get it from Barnes & Noble. You can get it from Book Baby. And the title of the book is The Glass is Full.
That's my glass is full.
My glass is full.
I looked up The Glass is Full. There is a book already out there called The Glass is Full.
Okay.
So this is My Glass is Full.
My Glass is Full. Stories of Putting Mental Health First. Amazing, Tom. Congratulations on everything. And thank you for truly being a thought leader. It's so appreciated. That's the word I want. We have to sign off, and I have to take a second to talk about who else is on this week and next week. But please, thank you so much. I know that somebody wrote in and asked us last week about your mom, because your mom is an amazing person in the field of autism, and she is wonderful and doing wonderfully, but she is, are we calling her retired or semi-retired? She's being a grandma now.
She is. I'm in Los Angeles. She's up outside of Seattle, Washington. She and my dad have been married for 43 years this August, and they're being grandparents to their granddaughters. That's my sister's daughters up there. And my mother and I still speak at least once a month. And we were up there, Rosetta and I, for the holidays past Christmas time. So we still talk with my family.
Yeah.
Every now and then.
So give hugs to your mom from us and from our viewers who were asking about her, wanting to know how she was doing. So give her hugs from us. Boy, did she raise a great son. But also, Tom, you have gone on to do amazing things with your life. So we just acknowledge that. And you're just such a wonderful, brilliant thought leader. Thought leader is the right term. So I'm going to leave it there. But thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
You take care.
You too.
Bye-bye. You guys, this week, we're not done by any stretch of the imagination. If you missed, we had Dr. Stephen Shore on Monday, and that's available in podcast and on YouTube right now. Yesterday, we did a great show with Dr. Grampy Shea for World Autism Awareness Day, talking about some of the questions that we don't ever get to with her about why did she choose to devote her life to the autism community. It's so moving. Then today with Tom, and this will be available on podcast later on today. Tomorrow, Kobe Bird, wonderful actor. You guys know him from Netflix's Lock and Key. He's with us tomorrow talking about all things Kobe, which is amazing. Then on Friday, Julie Matthews is here talking about nutrition. And her website and her book, Nourishing Hope, amazing. But she's part of a new study that took the 13 most common autism diets and looked at what symptoms did each of them alleviate. You're not going to want to miss this. Absolutely amazing stuff. Then on Saturday, Lois Brady joins us. She is now the co-publisher of the Autism Digest. Great, great opportunity to hear from her. You know, she's been on the show many times before in her capacity as a speech and language pathologist. She's got some exciting news for you guys about Autism Digest, plus how to get your free copy of the April edition and some of the really cool things that are in it. Then next week on Monday, we have Sarah Bradford, who is SJ Child. She's going to be talking with us about her new network and the International Autism Summit, so we're excited about that. Then we have Dr. Grant Pichet on Tuesday talking about bedtime challenges. That will be really wonderful. I'm trying to read. Wednesday, we have Amanda Ralston from Non-Binary Solutions talking about a product that she's got that she hopes will revolutionize the autism industry. I can't wait to hear more about it. On Thursday, we have the founders of Hurdle, an amazing organization in Florida. It's two gentlemen, both who identify as being on the spectrum, and what they are doing to support teens and adults on the spectrum. You're going to love that. And then on Friday, Katie Gibney is with us next Friday, a week from Friday, and she is an expert in treating teens and adults in a way that is empathetic and positive and helping them to get to goals that are important to them. So you're going to want to hear from her as well. And that's just this week and next week. Wait till you hear what we have. Let me just tell you, big stuff, including Dr. Temple Grandin, and will be on in April. So keep posted. Please check our social media. Right now, I just have the first 2 weeks up, but by the end of today, I will have the calendar, because it's done, the calendar up for the entire month. You can plan your time. If you miss a show, catch it in podcast, because it's a great, great month. All right, you guys. We're done for today, but make sure you tune in tomorrow for Kobe Bird. Until then, give your kiddos a hug from me and one for you, too. Bye-bye for now. If you found anything helpful in this video, please give us a like. In fact, make sure that you smash that subscribe button on YouTube and give us a like on Facebook. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Instagram for important updates. And please download our free podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much. See you next time. I'm so glad you're here joining us during April Autism Awareness Month. We're calling it Autism Awareness, Autism Appreciation, Autism Acceptance, and Autism Action, all of those. We're so excited to bring you wonderful shows. In this, the second week of April, our guests are Sarah Bradford from the SJ Childs Show. She's going to be talking with us about the International Autism Summit. We can't wait for that. On Tuesday, it's Dr. Marie Grammage. Ask Dr. Green, and her topic this week is bedtime challenges. Can't wait for that. On Wednesday, Amanda Ralston from Non-Binary Solutions will be talking with us. That should be fun. And on Thursday, the folks from Hurdle, these are two gentlemen from Florida who are making a huge difference for folks on the spectrum. They'll be joining us. And on Friday, it's Katie Gibney, a wonderful expert in treating adults on the autism spectrum. Wishes, hopes, and dreams for the future at the forefront of that treatment. It's going to be a great week. If you miss any of the shows, don't forget to catch catch them in podcast. Tune into all of our social media channels to know what's happening when. We have the full calendar for the entire month, so check it out.